Lecture 7, Freud's Psychosexual Stages.
Hello. In the last lecture, we discussed the development of the three-part mental process involving the id, the ego, and the superego that Freud had theorized. In this lecture, we're going to discuss another sequence of development, a sequence that Freud proposed that's called the psychosexual stages of development. And then we're going to talk about the famous Oedipus complex, which was part of that sequence of development of the psychosexual stages. And then we're going to conclude with an evaluation, a critique of some aspects of Freud's theory. In Freudian terms, a stage is a time in development in which the libidinal energy and attention is focused on specific ways of gaining pleasure and also of learning to adapt. So a certain amount of energy is focused on one thing. And a new stage arises as this focus shifts. Now, as we've mentioned, people are strongly motivated, in Freud's terms, by the Eros drives, the drive to obtain sexual gratification and pleasure and avoid pain. Freud accurately noted that there are different regions of the body that give us sexual, or to interpret it more broadly, sensual pleasure. And he called these regions the erogenous zones. And I think you can recognize that different parts of the body, whether you scratch your head or your ear, can give you pleasure. But he believed that specific erogenous zones that could give one pleasure were a primary zone of focus. And at different times in our life, starting with infancy and then working up, the focus shifted to a different zone, and that zone became the primary zone for giving pleasure. So a primary erogenous zone then would lead to a stage of development. The main zones that he talked about, these erogenous zones, were the oral zone, the mouth, the anal zone, and the phallic zone. I have to mention on the onset, he uses the word phallic, I think because he had a male bias. But when he talks about the phallic zone, he probably should have used the genital zone, and he meant your genitals. Let me tell you what his five stages were. The first stage was the oral stage, surprise, surprise, and it was associated or paralleled a focus on the oral zone and occurred in infancy. The second stage is the anal stage, and of course parallels and is focused on the anal zone and occurs in toddlerhood. And the third stage is the phallic stage. It has the focus on the phallic or genital zone and occurs during the preschool years. The fourth stage is really not a focus on any particular zone for gaining pleasure. It's a moratorium, if you will, a time when there's really not a focus. And he called this the latency stage. And it occurs during middle childhood, during the elementary school years. And the fifth and last stage is called the genital stage, again refocusing on the genitals, the genital zone, and this occurs during adolescence and, if you will, continues to adulthood. Now, Freud believed that certain habits or psychological and personality styles would develop in each of these stages, and it would depend on the way we gained pleasure and the way we dealt with these shifting erogenous zones. So these stages are not just sexual or erogenous stages. We call them psychosexual stages because they're based on these ways of gaining pleasure, the physical side, but they're also dealing with the way we behave, the way we develop for gaining pleasure and for dealing with the world. So let's go through the stages now. The first stage, again, is the oral stage. And we can observe that newborns almost immediately start sucking everything and anything. And then they learn to put, as soon as they can grasp, they learn to put almost everything in their mouths, to suck these things and eventually to chew them and attempt to eat everything. Now, this part's true. And Freud believed that in terms of adaptation and how we've evolved, it would make an absolute sense for this stage or this focus to be present at birth. See, because in this way, we're already predisposed to meet our basic biological needs. We have to discover what we can eat and what we can't eat. And I don't think there's too much disagreement there. It makes a lot of sense for kids to enjoy the pleasures of putting things in their mouth and sucking, because this way it keeps them going. Because the oral stage has a primary mode of incorporating objects, it made sense to Freud and others who followed him and talked about these stages that it was associated with the baby first learning to be attached to the mother. See, metaphorically, the oral stage is like incorporating others and parts of the world into oneself. So that's the metaphoric aspect of this stage. However, when an individual sticks with a stage or a zone too long, or when an individual has problems learning how to master the tasks that go along with this stage, that person may fixate a good deal of libidinal energy at that stage rather than shifting the energy to the next erogenous zone. Rather than shifting the energy and getting on with it, part of the energy stays at that stage. And so Freud used the term fixations. We fixate. He meant the energy that's involved at one stage and don't move on. In a sense, development should be at one stage, then we resolve things, we learn things, and we shift to the next stage. So when people fixate at the oral stage, they may carry with them into adulthood certain immature oral behaviors because they have energy that they're using there that they keep with them. Let me give you some examples of fixated oral behaviors. You chew pencils. You bite your fingernails. You smoke. You enjoy kissing. Or you seek out and enjoy oral sex. Now, all of these behaviors would be considered, in a strict Freudian sense, immature fixated behaviors from the oral stage. We'll return to some of these in a little bit. The second stage is the anal stage. And Freud argued that because the anus, I love this argument, by the way. Freud argued that because the anus was also part of this very important digestive system, and because it was at the opposite end of the digestive tract from the mouth, it was the logical next shift. In some sense, the anus was a displaced mouth. Don't you love that? But he tried to argue on why you'd shift from the oral zone to the anal zone as an erogenous zone. The anal stage does seem to emerge at a point when children are consciously aware of elimination functions. That's probably what happens. And they are interested and pay attention to bowel functions because it's at the beginning of toilet training, which, in my opinion, probably was a big issue and really tough in Freud's day. Freud argued that a young child gained a great deal of pleasure through the sensations of the bowels and the sphincter muscles in both retaining one's feces and also releasing and letting it go. So the metaphor for things happening during the anal stage was that we deal with retaining and also with giving away in psychological terms. See, these are issues that are associated, if you go even further, these are issues that are associated with gaining independence and autonomy in making distinctions between the self and others, what's you, what's not you. And if one previously became very attached to one's mother, now in this stage you need to find some kind of autonomy to figure out how you're different. Can you see that kind of metaphor and how he used this stage? Let's go back to fixations. When people fixate at the anal stage, then they carry certain anal behaviors with them throughout their lives or into adulthood. So examples of fixated anal behaviors are having problems with constipation or loose bowels throughout one's life, or seeking and enjoying anal sex. And there are two personality types that have become sort of famous, we use the terms a lot, that are associated with anal fixations. The first is called the anal retentive personality. And this involves a person holding on to things, holding back, retaining, and being stingy, anxious about order, overly neat. There's another personality type called the anal expulsive personality type. And this involves letting go, being loose with money and belongings, being overly sloppy, being messy. Freud could have it both ways. If you fixate, maybe you'll go the retentive way, maybe you'll go the expulsive way. And in fact, today, even if you don't believe they came from Freud's anal stage, we often use the terms you're an anal retentive person or you're an anal expulsive person. The third stage is the phallic stage. Remember, it's really the genital zones, biased towards male phallic stage. Freud believed that young preschool children began focusing on their genitals as a primary source of sensual pleasure. You can see it's getting more towards the mature adult level. The focus can be seen in frequent fondling and rubbing of the genitals in various forms of childish masturbation. And the focus also can be seen in an emerging interest in discussion about sex and genitals, sexual humor, interest in bodily functions that normally remain private in society. So there's a lot of bathroom talk and taboo talk and humor in these kids. This genital focus, again, was probably biased towards males. But I think, why didn't he call it the genital stage? But he also used the word genital for a subsequent stage. And maybe that's the reason he used it here. During the phallic stage, Freud believed that virtually all children go through an Oedipal conflict. This is part of the phallic stage. And I'm going to come back to that. We're going to discuss that in just a few minutes. But in any case, let me say now that when a child resolves or ends the Oedipal conflict, this brings an end to the phallic stage. And this is usually considered to be sometime between 5 and 6 years of age in Freud's theory. And there are, of course, fixations at the phallic stage as well. Fixations might include continuing masturbation, even homosexuality, having constant issues with stressful relationships with one's parents that you haven't resolved and broken away, self-oriented pleasure seeking. In other words, a very high level of egotism. The fourth stage Freud called the latency stage, and this was, as I mentioned, rather than being a stage focused on gaining erogenous pleasure through one of the bodily zones, this stage is really a break in the sequence. It's a moratorium, if you will, that happens during the middle childhood years. Freud believed that through the resolution of the Oedipal conflict, a child's sexual drives are driven deep underground. They become way unconscious for this period of time. And it's during this period of time, then, that children are not really driven by sexual drives, sexual needs, but rather they attempt to master tasks from the environment. Other things sort of take over. When you say the environment, that means school in Western cultures. In other words, it's the time when you'd expect them to develop a superego and learn about society's standards and do a lot of mastery attempts to learn about facts and things in their world. Now, the fifth stage, and this is the final stage, is called the genital stage. Didn't we already focus on the genitals? Okay. In this stage, Freud believed sexual drives were rekindled because of the onset of puberty, the onset of hormonal changes. Now we sort of return once again to these issues and this way of gaining pleasure through the genitals. However, this time it's different than it was during the initial phallic stage. This time the focus is on gaining mutual pleasure with another sex partner. I actually think it would have been better to term this the heterosexual stage and the previous one the genital stage. But nevertheless, if one has not fixated too much libido in the phallic stage or in some of the other stages, and if one has also resolved his or her parental relationships adequately to break away, then you can enter this genital stage and develop a healthy heterosexual relationship. In Freudian terms, if you haven't, you might be stuck with self-pleasures or maybe a homosexual focus in a Freudian sense, but not develop a healthy heterosexual relationship. In learning to coordinate these sex drives in this stage, an individual also has to substitute an appropriate love partner for the parent. Has to make a final break with the parent. So a lot of people have talked about during the genital stage, during adolescence, kids have to now sort of re-enter and relive the Oedipal conflict in its final form and work out a separation from the parents and find something that would be appropriate for them. Freud ultimately said that if you are a healthy individual and you're in the genital stage, you can both work and make love, or work and love. That's what you have. Let me just mention that there are some fixations that happen in these different stages that seem to really be rather harmless. Okay, they in fact add variety and spice to life. I don't think that we have problems accepting kissing as a continued source of pleasure. But there are other fixations that seem to be maladaptive in Freudian terms. And they can even become psychopathological. So, for example, some fixations might be on obsessions. On you're so obsessed with gaining pleasure in one way or focusing on one aspect that it leads you into addictive habits. It leads you into behaviors that overwhelm you in an obsessive way and take over your life. So fixations can be pretty tough, even though some of them may add spice to our life and variety. We've gone through all the stages now. Let me return, though, to that part of the phallic stage I said we'd talk about, the Oedipal conflict. In Freud's view, the Oedipus complex is a crucial and pivotal factor in development, and he considered it crucial for his entire theory. Not everybody thinks it's that crucial, but he did. Apparently, from what he said, Freud went through his own Oedipal conflict, at least in his own life, how he analyzed himself. And this greatly influenced his theorizing. If he went through it, he's trying to use those experiences to try to make sense of normal development. The Oedipus complex describes desires, jealousies, and confusions that children have as they work out strong feelings that they have toward their parents. And Freud called this conflict the Oedipus complex, as many of you know, because of its similarities to the story of King Oedipus in the Greek myth. Now, Oedipus, unbeknownst to him, killed his father and married his mother. And that unbeknownst to him part is important because it reflected the unconscious nature of this conflict. You see, Freud, who loved myths and stories and history in this way, believed that many important myths and stories that we have in a particular culture reflect universal emotional issues and problems that we have that we find in our species. So he expected to find similarities between myths from one culture to another. For him, the Oedipus myth wasn't just some simple story that was made up. It came about because this was really an underlying kind of conflict and issue. It was couched in terms of the story, but he took some of these aspects of it to help him explain this conflict that occurs. Now, boys and girls go through this conflict. In many cases, with girls, we call it the Electra complex. However, in this discussion, I'm going to call it all the Oedipal conflict, as many people do. So we're going to refer to this when we're talking about both boys and girls. Let me walk you through this. And I'm going to use a boy to start with. In the first phase, a boy is in the midst of the phallic stage. And this boy develops a strong sexual desire for the mother. The boy has the hots for mom. But what that means is the boy wants that mother's affection, that mother's intimacy, all to himself. This desire is immature, and it's in large part unconscious. The Oedipus complex does not denote an adult level of sexual desires. We've already said, sex for, Freud covered a broad range of desires and activities. So you can't think that this little kid wants to go in and actually have intercourse with his mom. He may not even understand that. In an unconscious way, he has some drives and desires for her, to be associated with her, for her affections, to be connected with her. And Freud definitely believed it was sexual, but it was an immature form, a little understood form by the boy. But in the process of wanting her, the boy realizes that his father is married to his mom, that he has her affection. And so the boy gets jealous of dad, because dad has what he wants. And he shows antagonism because of this jealousy. He shows resentment. And he also shows some aggression toward the dad. So, I know a kid who the mom said, "I love you." And he says, "And I love you too, and that's why I can never marry somebody else." And I know a girl, true stories, who said to her dad, "Daddy, kiss me. Kiss me 100 times more than you kiss mom." These things happen. We see kids that say these kinds of things. Or a little girl who says, "Dad, you come over. Mom, you go out in the other room." So you see these things that are occurring. We actually do see this kind of thing. Now, in Freud's view, a boy then starts, we're going back to this resentment, this aggression the kid feels towards the mom. The boy then starts fantasizing about getting rid of the dad. And he does this. Remember, we have wish fulfillment and primary process thinking. And he can do this in some fairly irrational ways. But this kind of thinking, if it becomes conscious at all, even if it's unconscious, starts scaring the boy. And one reason it scares the boy is he thinks the father knows his thoughts and may retaliate. You see, this doesn't require that the father is doing anything here, is really competing with the son. But the boy sees it as a competition. And in some egocentric way, if he's competing with the dad, dad must also be competing with him. And so the boy starts developing fears the dad's going to get back at him. And in Freud's term, he looks around, he sees his little sister, he sees some other girls, and he sees, they don't have a penis like I do. Dad's going to cut off mine. I'm going to lose it. So Freud talked about castration anxiety, thinking the dad would punish him in this way that has to do in some way he doesn't understand with sex, has to do with castrating him. Now, girls go through a parallel conflict, but you have to reverse the roles for father and mother. However, according to Freud, the girl doesn't have castration anxiety, of course. What she has is penis envy, because she wants what her father can give her and what her mother doesn't have. There are many observers of children who've criticized this aspect of Freud's theory. They believe that the description for girls was not really evidenced in reality and probably came because Freud's focus is on the male version, and he doesn't seem to observe girls very well. But I can get rid of that. If you take the main thrust of this Oedipus complex and forget the specific penis envy and castration anxiety, and just say, for either sex, you've got a kid who really wants exclusive attention and affection from the opposite sex parent, and in the process feels sort of a jealousy and a competition and antagonism towards the same sex parent, you've got the conflict without all of the nitty-gritty details that might get in the way. That's the basic phenomenon, and that's the basic first phase of the Oedipal conflict. Now, the second phase of the conflict is when this emotional dilemma, and this is truly emotional for this kid, and when this dilemma is resolved. So, in effect, the boy really can't marry his mother, and eventually he has to accept that. He can't have her to himself. Dad is really already married to her. She's older. She's his mom. There are a lot of things going on. And also, the boy really doesn't want to get rid of his dad, because maybe in some ways he wants to get rid of him. He feels antagonistic. But he also loves his dad. You see, through these mixed emotions. So he has to resolve this in some way. To escape retaliation from the father and to escape all of this emotional turmoil, the boy comes to identify with the father in two important ways. First, the boy shows a defensive identification. That is, he becomes like the father because the boy is attempting to make the father his friend rather than his enemy. We identify with the enemy in some ways, and therefore we become buddies with him. And the second way is the boy shows instrumental identification. By imitating his father, he becomes like him, and in that way, he gets what his father had. If he becomes like him, he'll get the same rewards and benefits that his father had. So the boy identifies with his father. He internalizes the dad's viewpoints and values, including the society standards that go with it, and he gives up on his mother as a love object. And the girl does the same in reverse for the mother. Now, according to Freud, there are three main important results of this resolution. First, the boy develops a superego because he incorporates these standards. Second, he develops a strong gender role identity from the father or the mother and appropriate role models. And third, his sexual desires are driven underground and he goes into a latency period. Okay. One can see in Freud's theory that if the child doesn't resolve this conflict, he or she will not develop optimally. So this is a case that for Freud was absolutely crucial to normal development. Let me go on now, after we've presented this, and give you, in summary and in conclusion, a critique of Freud's theory. Currently, there are many people, including therapists, who see Freud's theory as highly valuable in explaining real-life development and human nature. However, there are many others who reject most of his theory as being valid. Let me talk about the positive side as I see it. Freud, through a combination of insight, through genius, and through the cultural context of his life, seemed to hit on some truths about human nature that we generally accept today. I said, we've made these implicit as part of our general feeling. They weren't accepted before Freud came along. First and foremost, our unconscious processes are always working and influencing our motivations and actions. I don't think we can ever go back to not considering that. Second, the previous events and relationships in our lives, especially from childhood, strongly influence later relationships and behaviors. Whether you buy the Oedipus complex or not, previous relationships influence later relationships. Third, we do indeed seem to use defense mechanisms. When we have conflicting desires and motives, it seems to be part of our mental processing that we use a lot of different mechanisms to work this out, to block or to channel. And a fourth area, I think sexual desire is a strong motivator of behavior and how we think. It's a motivator that's there even before puberty. You don't have to wait to puberty to have sexual desires and to have sex a part of life in humans. But let me go to the error side. There's some errors in Freud's theory as well. He didn't seem to be a very keen observer of many periods of child development. We talked about a good theory ought to be in touch with the way children really seem to develop. In some ways he was. But some ways, with what we know today about child development, it doesn't exactly match, particularly the psychosexual stages. They seem to describe some aspects of development, but they don't seem to capture some of the important things that developmentalists have talked about as we talk about sequences of change. The Oedipal theory is particularly tough on females. It seems to shortchange them in talking about how they develop a weaker superego in logically explaining how they identify and work. They started out being attached to their mother. They have to give up. Then they go to the father. Then they come back to the mother. It doesn't work as well as Freud worked it out for boys. Although we see different personality styles, like an anal retentive type, there's almost no empirical evidence that fixations at a particular stage lead to these different personality styles. They may be there. We can give it a name like anal retentive, but no evidence shows that's where it comes from. And then there's a big question on whether the Oedipus conflict is indeed universal. It does not seem to explain a lot of parental conflicts and family jealousies, which are there, but they don't seem to have, but the Oedipus complex itself doesn't seem to explain normal gender role development or the internalization of moral standards. And we have other ways of explaining that today. Sexual drives are important. They're present before puberty, but they may not be the foundation for all motivation. One thing that Freud did not hit on was the importance of intrinsic motivation towards competence, gaining competence and mastery. So what should we do with him? Assess him in light of what we know today, take away what's good, and leave the rest. And I think this will be helped along, because next time we're going to talk about the second of our major theorists, Erik Erikson's psychosocial theory, which in fact developed from Freud's theory and modified it. Thank you.